I would say Kirby games are easy, but they're also strangely difficult if you're trying to do everything. And they can you can find challenge in them.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Kirby Conversations. I'm Sean Douglas. I'm a writer and podcaster with credits at various theater and video game publications. And I am here, as usual, with Bridget. Hi, Bridget.
Hi, I'm a collector and longtime fan.
Yeah, all around Kirby guru, Bridget is here with us again. And we want to wish a happy birthday to Kai as well. Kai, Captain Dangerous Parker, who's also a recurring person on this show. But today is her birthday, and she had some unexpected things come up. Still very much with the show, just today didn't work out. But I hope she's having a great birthday with her friends from out of town.
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday! So for this episode, we are talking about a topic that we've talked about a lot amongst ourselves before, which is a subject that comes up a lot, I think, in Kirby discourse, which is the difficulty of Kirby games and whether or not that's an issue. This is a subject that we talked about in a pilot we recorded for this show a few months back that we didn't end up using. It was more of a test episode, and we thought we should return to that topic and do a regular episode about it.
I think this topic's great, actually, and one that I think is at the heart of Kirby's identity. So I'm glad that we are coming back to this. I think it's a topic that deserves an episode and is one with probably a lot of opinions on the matter from people either within Kirby players or, you know, those who don't typically play the games, but maybe pass them by or just think that, you know, they're children only. So I think this is a good, exciting episode.
Yeah, and then that'll be our act one, is to talk about Kirby difficulty today. And then for act two, I have a game prepared for us that I'm calling Retirement Party, that uses the retirement rate for different games as listed on the website How Long to Beat, which is a website that people use to keep track of how long it's taken them to complete different games, and they record data about like how long it took them to beat the main story versus main story plus extras versus a completionist run. And they also record how many games they just kind of gave up on. And I thought it would be interesting to look at that data from the perspective of difficulty and see whether or not difficulty really affects how much people want to stay with the game or not. And I've turned it into a little game where Bridget will try to guess which game among two that I give her had the higher retirement rate. Like, which one did people give up on more?
I'm so excited for that. I really want to see what the games are.
I wonder if... make it kind of fun and kind of funny.
Okay.
Sekiro does make appearance.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so Sekiro will make an appearance. And some other games that maybe you aren't expecting. And then for Act 3, that's going to be a Patreon-only segment. We always conclude every episode with an Act 3 just for the patrons on Patreon. And for that, we're going to keep with our theme of difficulty and talk about our favorite video game accomplishments from both childhood or adulthood, things we look back on in video games that maybe took a lot of effort to get through, or maybe there are things we look back on that we did as a kid that wouldn't be as hard as adults, but like at the time felt like a big accomplishment. So we'll talk about some of our favorite video game accomplishments and difficult moments that we got through. And I don't know Bridget's stories. I don't know which ones she's come up with for this show either. So I'm looking forward to hearing your stories for that as well.
Yeah, I'm excited to listen to yours.
Yeah, I've got some stories involving Dynamite Heady and Crash Bandicoot Warped.
Whoa. Oh, cool. Okay.
And that'll be you'll have a full episode in the regular feed, but if you want that extra one, that'll be on Patreon. So we'll start with Act One, and let's talk about difficulty in Kirby games. So I think I'll start with just the general question, and then we'll start referencing some articles and some other research we did on this. But Bridget, do you think Kirby games are too easy?
Yes. And I think I mean, that's the purpose, right? I feel like Sakurai pretty much said so on his video for Dreamland, that when conceiving the character, he wanted a character and series of games in which everyone can sort of find accessibility with and could play regardless of their history with video games. So I think that that's Kirby's mission, right, is to be sort of like the hand that guides you into the world of gaming, which I think is honorable and like a beautiful thing. There's a lot of games that, you know, people start off with, but maybe not the best start for them if they haven't developed the coordination yet between like controller and actions on the screen. And so having something that's a little more easygoing to acclimate yourself to is important. It was important for me. Like, I had to share most of my games with my brother when we were younger, and I was often player two or had to, you know, watch him while he played, you know, the game on screen, and I wanted to join, but it was a little harder for me. So it wasn't until I got my own Game Boy and a copy of Kirby's Dream Land that I got to actually beat a game on my own. And I remember it being like so daunting at the time, but now it's like a game I can just beat in like 15 minutes or something, you know, something short. And it's incredible. And I don't think I would be playing the games that I play now if it weren't for that role that Kirby had in my life.
I like how you got to experience Kirby's Dream Land in that way. Like, you had exactly the kind of experience that Sakurai wanted you to have.
Yeah, exactly. That was the point. And I'm happy for it. I don't think that's a bad thing. And I don't think, I mean, I consider the Kirby games entry level design games. And like, what I mean by that, and I don't know if this is like the terminology used in video game discourse, but I feel like it should be maybe a term, because there's a different right between like a game aimed at children that's sort of like a Barbie game or a Disney game that doesn't have a lot of thought put into it. And it's mostly aimed at children because children will want that to buy because it has their character in it, right? Versus like an entry level game is made with the complete consideration of like bringing people into the fold of gaming. It doesn't have to necessarily be a child. So, you know, there's a difference between something made for children and something made for beginners, which can include adults. Mm-hmm. And
like The Lion King for Sega Genesis, not an easy game, but a game aimed at children.
Oh, God, I have such nightmares of that game. I had to watch my brother play that game, and my brother had such a short temper. He was one of those people who threw controllers, and I would just be like, don't do that, you're gonna destroy the controller. But I could kind of understand where he was coming from, because it was brutal to watch. But yeah, there's like a difference, right? I mean, that game would be for kids, you know, according to the marketing and the fact that it's like based on something aimed at children. But with Kirby, like, that's not exactly the point, even though it gets this reputation because it's cute and friendly and easygoing, is that, oh, it's for children, which, yes, it is, but there's a difference, right? Entry is for anyone trying to get into gaming. So I included a quote from Shumplations, who does normally just a lot of retro kind of article, developer article translations and that sort of stuff. And they did one for Nightmare in Dreamland. There was an interview with Sakurai and the developers, and I have a quote here where Sakurai explains, at first, they were planning a more kiddie direction for the commercial. This is a commercial for Nightmare in Dreamland in Japan. But after I explained that Kirby wasn't specifically aimed at children, but was rather meant to be something that beginners and all ages could enjoy, Nintendo was flexible and changed it for me. So there's a difference, right? We have beginner games and we have like kiddie games. And I think Kirby is in this unique design, like concept for games that probably people don't think a lot about, but it's sort of a thoughtful kind of design by game developers to get people into games. And I think that's something different.
Yeah, and I think like both of us have had experiences playing Kirby games with our parents, for example.
Yes.
And that's like another space where it's like, if I wanted to play video games with them, like a few years back, I introduced them to Kirby Star Allies. And they don't normally play video games. And they didn't always know like exactly what to like look for on the screen and stuff. But like they could figure it out and they could play it with me. And I liked being able to have a game that I could share with them because I don't normally play games with my parents and they don't normally play video games themselves. But that felt like a nice sort of intersection on the Venn diagram for something that could work for both of us.
Yeah, my mom loves Kirby, actually. She just recently got into video games. My mom is an older Puerto Rican woman in her late 50s. She grew up with, she was adopted, and she grew up with really religious, adopted parents who would not even approve of her, watching television at her friend's house. So she didn't get to enjoy the childhood that she gave me. And she's sort of having fun now in her adulthood, just going back and enjoying Kirby games with me. Like we've played Forgotten Land together. We've played Star Allies, Return to Dreamland. And it's been so great. And I find them easier to play with her than Mario games. Like if I play Mario games with her, she'll probably fall into a pit. With Kirby, she can kind of be zipped back to where I'm at, which I love and works for her and works for me. And it's so thoughtful and so welcoming and so open too to playing with children, adults, newcomers. I think it's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really cool that she gets to have that experience now that she missed out on when she was younger in some ways. Not that Kirby was even really around back then, but
experiences
like that.
Yeah, just having fun with, playing games and seeing colorful things and then getting to enjoy them. And she loves this. She loves Kirby now. It's funny, if I get something Kirby, then she's into it too. And she has Kirby things now too. So it's cute.
That's so cool. I think we can hear people outside your apartment in your parking lot celebrating that as well.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Someone is out there with their radio so loud. Oh, no, I apologize. You don't deserve... Of course, my computer is right in front of my window.
We're hearing their ambient celebrations right now.
They're excited to go home and play Kirby.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what it is.
I wanted to also bring up, I think the Sakurai videos were actually really helpful for this topic, mm-hmm. because he does, you kind of have to go back to the source, right, on the material for its intentions, right? And you have to kind of understand what the thought process was for games like Kirby. And I think if you watch his Risk and Reward video, he does a great video on the concept of risk and reward, and he uses, the standard, a good example that most people recognize is Mario, right? Where it's he explains risk and reward in Mario by describing the distance between Mario and the enemy, where there is a satisfaction in landing on the enemy, but the closer you are, the higher the risk is of yourself taking damage and dying. But it's an exciting risk and reward. And I feel like entry-level games are thoughtfully considered because in his thought process, even before he kind of saw in those terms, he considered how to use the enemies against each other and how to have this kind of level of distance between the player and the enemy. And I think that's something that's actually been explored in Mario as well. Like in Mario, the original Mario, you get a flower, right? And then you get the firepower and, you're suddenly a lot safer. You don't have to get as close to the enemy. You make the game a little easier for yourself, but you have that choice also to dictate your own difficulty in Mario. You don't have to grab the Yoshi either, who also has the ability to attack from afar. But with Kirby, he considered his ability to inhale and use enemies against other enemies, which does sort of, for me, make it seem quite considered, because it's something that happens a lot, right? My mom's a good meter for understanding a new player, because I'll give her the control and then watch her. And if she plays Mario, one of the first things she does is like run into an enemy.
Yeah, I remember like... when Nintendo had Super Mario 35.
Yeah, yeah.
How like you were seeing so many people playing Mario at the same time, right? It had that battle royale format. There was like always someone at the beginning of every round who hit the very first Goomba.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You just knew that it was going to happen. Like, right off the bat, someone would get eliminated.
Yeah, so like I feel like entry level games are sort of considerate of that, and it got me thinking about like what other games are sort of in that realm, so where they have that consideration. So like for a lot of entry level games, I kind of did a bit of a breakdown here, but I said I made a list here. They often remove the distance first of the risk reward element that's required in handling enemies. They also make it either easier to avoid pitfalls in some way or another, and they usually remove the one hit kill thing that is common in games like Donkey Kong or Mario, which is like one or two hits and then you're dead. So games that I put in this category are that might appeal to Kirby fans as well, actually. Things like games like Klonoa, where you grab an enemy and also throw it. You also have a little bit of a hover for jumps.
Yeah, and you have a health, really fun.
Yeah, and you have more of a health bar or like stock. Starfy. I included Starfy because it's beginner friendly. You have a bit of a float. You have a spin attack, which is more an extended attack for when you're near enemies. It kind of lasts a little longer than just like a quick punch or something. So it's very friendly for beginners. I included Princess Peach, which also has a spin. And then you also have your abilities in there. There's Yoshi's.
The new Peach one?
The new Peach one, yep.
Okay. Yeah, I think it actually looks pretty fun too. I know people have said that it's not as difficult, but also that, you know, it will take multiple runs through a given level to really find everything. And I think as a Kirby fan, it's probably up my alley.
Yeah, I think this would totally fit this like this group of games. I also included Yoshi's Story and Woolly World, which have grabs, and Yoshi of course has a flutter, and you have a bit more health as well. And then I also included older games like Magical Taru Tycoon. Hopefully I said that right. Which is actually based on an anime where like a little kid can kind of bring items to life. And he does that in the game and throws them at enemies, which is sort of like the Kirby Klonoa thing. And then I also included Doremi Fantasy Mylon's Quest, where you can put enemies in bubbles and you can hit other enemies with it too. So all these games are sort of in that avenue of kind of like this curve, like this thoughtful design of reducing risk and reward in a similar way that Kirby does. So I think that these are games that are meant to be, they're not just kiddie games, but they're newcomer games. Then they're not just for children, but they're for, you know, people who are, just want to dip their toes into gaming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's really important too as video games become more and more mainstream. I mean, the video game industry is larger than the film industry, I believe, at this point. And you want video games to be able to reach everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that on that idea of Kirby being approachable and not just for kids also ties back to some of the themes and just some of the cinematic elements that go on in Kirby games that do sometimes feel aimed at a bit more of a mature audience in certain ways. Kirby and the Forgotten Land, for example, was rated E10+. Right? And in an interview with the Washington Post, Shinya Kumazaki, the current director of the Kirby series, was asked, the stories of every Kirby game are deceptively deep with lots of fantasy elements. What are some of the inspirations behind some of the darker elements of the Kirby story? And this is an interview from Gene Park at the Washington Post. And Kumazaki replies, I think that cute is a major part of people's image of Kirby. However, our direction for the story in Kirby and the Forgotten Land was to demonstrate that Kirby games can also have a lot more depth than people might expect. In the Kirby's Adventure era, people thought King Dedede was the final boss, but then it turned out there was an even scarier mastermind named Nightmare trying to take over Dreamland with the power of nightmares. Since then, we have always had this kind of game structure where there is a surface story and a hidden truth that is revealed later on. For the Kirby series with its cute appearance and gameplay, we write the game story with the goal of surprising children with shocking developments when they reach the climax, while drawing in more experienced players with exciting challenges to exceed their expectations. Even within the same game, character, location, and song names actually become darker or more serious as you progress, gradually leading up to the climax. So they're very much aware of that interplay between things that are going to be exciting for children and things that are going to be exciting for players who have a lot more kind of general experience with video games and are looking for something a little deeper, yeah, a little darker. And that's one of the things I like about the Kirby series, is that interplay between the darkness and the lighter elements, where it doesn't do it in an ironic way, where I feel like maybe a lesser hand on this sort of thing would be like, oh, it's a cute game, and then there's this sort of like ironic dark moment or something. But instead, it feels like just a world that is alive with both good, innocent things and darker realities. And there's a certain psychological realism to the world where people have struggles and have to overcome things. And I think that it is an inherently mature world, even if it's very whimsical and very child-friendly, just with that amount of depth that is built into it and the complexity of the characters within this seemingly simple, idyllic world that still has problems and issues in it.
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated, right? I think this quote's interesting because it sort of says that all the darker elements of the story are sort of aimed at youth, whereas like the challenges are aimed at older people, possibly, or at least older veteran gamers anyway. But I think you're right. I think it depends, right? It does have to travel a thin line where it's like you can end up making something sort of cheesy if it's like, oh, it's cute, but it's like, oh, it's messed up or whatever. And I think Kirby like definitely avoids that like tastefully. Kirby does a good job of being sort of about mood and doing things with its environment and keeping some things mysterious. So it's never too one way or the other. And I like it. It gives people room to speculate and enjoy the game on multiple levels, right? So they can ponder the world, and then they can also get all this extra content afterwards that's more demanding. Some of it genuinely very hard.
Yeah, exactly. And I do think that that's important, and that's sometimes overlooked, all those other layers. I think sometimes, especially older players, maybe they've heard so much about Kirby games being easy, or they've played other easier Kirby games in the past. And Kirby games do have a tendency to save their more difficult parts for later in the game. And that means that a lot of players might not get to those parts that are aimed more at people who are their level, and give up on these games perhaps before they get to the parts that are really aimed for them.
Yeah, it's complicated because I get where they're coming from. I mean, no one's, it's tough, right? Games are, you know, they're $60, they're expensive, they're time consuming. And if the stuff that you're into isn't until like 30 hours later, then you're probably sort of like, well, I might not get there, you know? It's like when someone tells you a show's going to be good after a certain amount of episodes, but then you got to sit through those episodes. So, I mean, I get where they're coming from, too. If you need satisfaction right away.
That's a very good analogy.
Some things are worth building up to, and Kirby's kind of works that way for me.
Yeah, and I think that can be gratifying right out of the gate. Like, yeah. I don't play Kirby games expecting them to be hard right off the bat. I play them because I enjoy the experience of being with these characters, being in these worlds, all the different abilities that he has. And I think that to get back to the original question that we started this act on is, are they too easy? I would say that as much as I enjoy that experience of having a leisurely time fighting through the enemies and finding these collectibles and enjoying the often very funny stories that these games have and just very charming stories that they have, mm-hmm, I do wish it ramped up the difficulty at either a slightly faster rate sometimes, or gave me more options to tailor the experience to the difficulty level that I would want as a more experienced player. And I say that as someone who really enjoyed Kirby Star Allies, which is one that I think was kind of maybe particularly identified as an easier entry. I was willing to play that game over and over again. I completed it with all the unlockable characters. I was willing to play through some of those same levels many, many times, just with different characters, to run through the different like helper stories and things like that. And I didn't mind playing it over and over again. But after a while, it did start to feel like, well, I wish there was more here.
Yeah.
I mentioned that on Instagram. I had posted something, and Kumazaki actually liked that post where I had said, like, I hope there is like DLC. I forget exactly how I worded it, but I said that I like hoped there was more coming in like DLC or something. and it turned out there was. And yeah. I really liked the DLC too, but I feel like that was maybe the point where I really felt like, wow, now the game is really firing on all cylinders. They're really making me use all these different characters' abilities in new ways. And it wasn't that what was previously there was bad. It's just that the DLC really allowed it to flourish and really pushed it even further into something that I had always kind of felt like the main game could have been from the start.
Yeah, I mean, I play harder games all the time. I also play chill games. I'm kind of all over the place.
And I should note that I'm not at all implying that the DLC came because I posted that Instagram.
Oh, yeah. You made it happen.
That. I just thought it was funny that Kumazaki liked it and was probably thinking like, okay, yet another person maybe mentioning this. It's coming. Like,
Oh, thank you, Sean. No, it's probably, he knew it was coming. And he's like, boy,
this
just
person
you wait.
Will get something they want soon.
Yeah, exactly. It is a bummer you can't always customize your experience a little more. Like, one thing I liked in the original Dreamland actually was that menu you can unlock, and you can kind of change the amount of stock or lives or whatever you had. So you could have made it like as brutal as you wanted, like, oh, you can't take any hit for like this whole this whole run and no lives if you want.
Yeah, I thought about that when we were preparing this episode and thinking like, I wish that were in other games. Like,
yeah, right.
Would make a game like Star Allies or something and say you only get one hit. Like, oh, I think that would increase tension in a way that I would appreciate.
Yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes games do give you difficulty options or levels, or you can go into like the options and like change the amount of, like, some older games let you go into the menu and like change the amount of lives that you can have and stuff. I don't know if they really do that anymore or not.
Yeah, it was such a classic thing in so many games for a long time. It's like, you start the game, you choose the difficulty level you want, or you choose how many lives you want to have. Like, it was a pretty expected thing, almost. Like, you go in the options menu, do you want, you know, easy, normal, or hard? And Kirby games have never taken that approach, and maybe with quite that many different levels of difficulty. Like, yeah. Forgotten Land has the wild mode and stuff, but...
It's wild. No, it's just a little bit.
Yeah. Slightly wild, though.
It's lightly mild.
There was an interesting interview that Nintendo did with the developers of Forgotten Land, where Kumazaki talks about how, like, HAL would submit a version of the game, and there weren't that many enemies in it, and Nintendo would say they want more, and he was kind of joking that, like, everyone on the team, like, really cares about Kirby, and then they felt bad surrounding him with enemies. But I think that was maybe good to have those two companies kind of in dialogue about Kirby difficulty, because maybe Nintendo was pushing them a little further than they were initially willing with the difficulty. And it seemed like that dialogue was ultimately pretty productive. I know Kumazaki has said too in interviews that he wonders if maybe he made the end of Forgotten Land too difficult. He wonders if that final boss was too much of a challenge. But I think I would rather have a more difficult challenge at the end than not. And I would rather have that extra difficulty mode, that wild mode, than not.
Yeah.
And people who don't want it can always choose to not play that way.
Exactly. No, I'm with you there.
I've also been playing the extra mode in Kirby's Return to Dream Land Deluxe right now. And I feel like, well, that's a game that already, you know, existed.
Yeah.
And this is the remake. So I played through it twice. And now I'm playing it a third time. And mm-hmm. that's a situation too, where I think like, well, I could have played the extra mode right off the bat. And yeah. I actually think I'm liking the extra mode. Like, I liked playing through it again. But I think I'm actually liking the extra mode a little bit more because mm-hmm. it is more difficult. And Kirby has a smaller life bar and there are more enemies. Yes. And it's like, it kind of reminds you of just all the layers of Kirby gameplay that you don't think about as much when they are easier, where there's a lot of technicality that goes into really being skilled with his abilities and choosing the right ability for the right situation. And there are people that will even analyze abilities in terms of frame data, almost like it's a fighting game. But you don't really have to do that when you're playing the easier Kirby levels or easier Kirby modes. And it's kind of interesting because it almost becomes like a new dimension of the game once it starts getting more difficult. And you start to realize like, oh, the strategies that I used before just don't always work anymore. and this is really going to push me to play better. And it's not, you know, it's not brutally difficult, but it reminds me of how much depth is there and how well designed these games are. And sometimes if a game is too easy, you just don't notice that because you've never had to in a way.
Yeah, it's interesting. I guess I'm familiar with this from my days, like way back, just playing like Arena and Superstar, where it's like there was no need to learn to. I mean, you know, there's two ways to play Kirby. You're new and you grab a power and you just spam it and you kill the guy. And then there's like the person who takes the time to understand the movesets and is like, what is the most efficient way to deal with this boss, or when they drop this star, or when I can do like this charge, or whatever it is, right? Suddenly you're working on a more technical level, and that's there. It's just so toned down in a lot of ways. That's like, it's not forced on you to like be this good or to know the abilities like that, but you have that option if you want. It's just not forced in Kirby games, and you don't always get a chance to maybe see it shine if you're not playing it that way or forced to do a challenge with them. So it is complicated because I think a lot of people do miss out on like that depth that's in Kirby games when it's not asking that of you. But then the games are so open as well to not ask that of you that you can kind of play however you want. And that's kind of its charm too. So
yeah, and I definitely want to emphasize that there's not a right or wrong way to enjoy these games. Like if you're playing it and having fun, like do what you most enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Play however you want. You can spam that bomb. I won't say anything.
Yeah.
it's great. I like its openness too. I play so many challenges in the Kirby games and it's not asked of me and I don't mind. Would I like more challenge? Sure. But I also get it too. So it's complicated, right? I just don't always get it the way I want when I want it. But I get it and I enjoy it. So yeah, I would say Kirby games are easy, but they're also strangely difficult if you're trying to do everything. And you can find challenge in them, even if they're not always forced. Mm-hmm. And there's complexity to them, even if it's not apparent at first or unlocked right away. It's complicated, and it's all these things because it has to appeal to so many people, which is how I consider Kirby. It's games for trying to include everyone as it can to the best of its ability.
Yeah, and I wouldn't want that to change. I think the only thing I would change is making some of the more difficult content more available earlier on, or maybe having more difficulty levels for experienced players who want that right out of
the game. I agree. I would love it. I would not say no to that.
This is just a quick intermission before our second act to say thank you to all the listeners who have reached out to the show so far. Thank you for your comments, your questions, your reviews, and other engagement. I know this is still a relatively new show, and we've really appreciated your support. For this episode, we thought we'd get some comments from our listeners on Kirby difficulty as well to hear some of their thoughts. So I have two people here whose comments I'd like to read. who responded to us on Instagram. So our first one is someone named Matt B. Thank you for your comments, Matt. I won't read the whole thing, but Matt writes, as for the Kirby games I've played, I've never felt like they needed to be harder, parentheses, and definitely not any easier, parentheses, because I enjoyed the chill and playful nature of these games. However, using Forgotten Land as a recent example, I do appreciate the slight late-game increase in difficulty and the reasonably challenging nature of its post-game, parentheses, including the final arena. I hope that future Kirby games keep these challenging post-games without hindering the enjoyment of the main games that so many casual and hardcore players have loved throughout the years. I definitely agree, Matt. And then I also have a comment from someone called the Kirby Collector. That's Collector with a K. And he writes, and I won't read the whole thing here, and he writes, as one who has always adored the franchise, as in the Kirby franchise, I would like to state that I believe the game is made with every kind of player in mind. From those who just want to experience the story without having to worry about whether or not they can beat the game, to those who look for a challenge or have a completionist mentality as well. Many Kirby games, while looking at the surface level, may come off as easy. However, that is just reaching the surface of what the game has to offer. Many games have post-game extra modes, missable collectibles, side challenges, or modes such as the True Arena that prove to be quite difficult. He points out the challenge stages in Kirby's Return to Dream Land or Kirby's Return to Dream Land Deluxe, and how difficult it can be to get the platinum medals in those stages. He also points out anyone can beat Star Allies, but not everyone can complete Soul Melter EX. So thank you both for your comments. I definitely agree with what you shared about the different ways that people can experience Kirby games and the different levels of challenge they offer. If you would like to send Kirby Conversations an email, if you have a question, if you have a comment you'd like to share, we'd love to hear your thoughts, and we might even read them here on the show. You can email us at mail@kirbyconversations.com. We also have a Patreon with various tiers of rewards that give you different levels of extra content from the show. If you would like to explore those, there's a link to our Patreon in the show notes as well. And now, on to Act Two. So we're going to switch the focus here while still talking about difficulty, but I want to introduce our game that I'm calling Retirement Party, because we're talking about retirement rates in video games, which is the number of people who have said that they are done playing something. And this is based on data from the website howlongtobeat.com. Now, this is not in any way a scientific study. These are just the people who happen to put in their information on the website. I'm sure there are a lot of people in the games that we've looked at who have stopped playing these games or finished these games or whatever, who, you know, are like, I mean, I don't report my data on how long to beat or anything. Like, most people don't, but at least it gives us a sample of people who have decided that they have stopped playing something versus finishing it. So let me bring up our first two entries. And Bridget, you'll have to tell me which of these two games did more people quit playing?
Okay. That's exciting. Now, would this include people who maybe just got bored and stopped playing too?
I think boredom does count.
Okay. Because, you know, people probably quit for different reasons. Although I guess if you got stuck and it was too hard, I guess that would count.
All right. So our first pairing, we're going to start with a Kirby game, since we're talking about Kirby. Not all of these will be Kirby games. Most of them won't be. But let's go back to Kirby's Return to Dream Land Deluxe. So we've got Kirby's Return to Dream Land Deluxe versus a game that I know you like, Sekiro Shadows Die Twice.
Yeah, I love that game.
So the retirement rate is listed as a percentage. Huh. So what percent of people have reported that they stopped playing? Seemingly as a separate thing from saying they completed it.
Like, if I say like half the people gave up on Sekiro, would that, you mean like that?
Yeah, like which game do you think had the higher retirement rate?
Okay. Part of me thinks Sekiro because it's harder, but I don't know that necessarily, for some people that might keep them playing longer until they got really stuck. So maybe this is like a trick. I'm gonna say it's Kirby.
So it is Sekiro in this example.
Oh, I was wrong.
But I wanted to start with this one because I think it's very telling. So yeah. Kirby's Return to Dream Land Deluxe has a very low retirement rate of 1.4%.
Nice. Excellent.
So very few people have listed themselves as just quitting it. Again, this is not a sample of every person who's ever played the game. But of the people that at least felt like recording this, most of them did not record that. Most people, well, let's see how it breaks down. I'll click on the link. Of the people who reported their data, and there's a few different categories, but as of this recording, 395 people have said that they completed it, and 11 people said that they retired.
Wow. So that's
great. People stick with it. And I think this is interesting, too, because, like, for all the people that say, oh, Kirby games are too easy, they're boring, people get tired of them, if it seems like people who at least, like, are interested enough to want to get into it, they'll see it through.
Yeah, that's great.
And Sekiro also has a low retirement rate. Sekiro has a 4.3%.
Wow.
So they're actually really close. So Kirby was, so Sekiro is 4.3 and Kirby is 1.4. So it's very close. And I think this kind of goes to show, and this carried over when I looked at other ones too. Difficulty does not seem to heavily affect the retirement rate for a lot of these games. Even like Elden Ring didn't have a particularly high retirement rate.
Wow. That one's surprising. Because I feel like Elden Ring was so, like, advertised and it sold, like, so crazy, like, such a crazy amount. And I was thinking, like, there's so many new people who are coming in and they don't know what they're in for. There's probably going to be a bunch of people who drop out. That was not the case, I guess.
Yeah, I think that there are, and they're just people who aren't recording their information on this website. True. Because this website is obviously a sample of people who like to record whether or not they completed things. So it probably has a lot of people that are sort of inherently completionist already.
Yeah.
But we'll see from some of the other games they choose that these people don't beat everything. But I think that if something is really popular and like there are a lot of, you know, I don't always like the phrase hardcore gamers, but let's say like really experienced people. It seems to attract people who are like really into a particular game and who really want to track their progress. And I think once you're invested like that, it does lead people to finish things, whether they're, you know, easy or difficult. It's maybe just more of a reflection of people's like investment in a game.
Yeah.
And if you're the kind of person who likes hard games, you're going to stick with something. If you're someone who likes more leisurely games like Kirby, you're also going to stay with it. And it doesn't look like difficulty is necessarily like the deciding factor with whether or not people finish things.
I'm both these people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Inside everyone, there are two wolves. One wolf wants to play relaxing Kirby games, and the other one wants to play difficult FromSoft games.
That is me. That's awesome. Well, I like how committed people are. I kind of feel that way too. Like once I start something, I want to try to see it through. Not always, but usually.
So for our next one, we've got two games about going fast. We've got Sonic Frontiers.
Okay.
And we've got Gran Turismo 7. Two very different games.
I'm going to say Sonic because Sonic fans are intense and probably really committed.
So Sonic has the higher or the lower one?
The higher completion.
Okay. You would be correct.
Woo!
So Sonic Frontiers. So I picked this one. I wasn't sure if this would be a little tricky because I think this game did get kind of mixed reactions when it came out. I liked Sonic Frontiers. I actually wrote a little load at the Gamer. But it has a low retirement rate of 3.2%.
Nice. Good job, Sonic.
And, you know, maybe it wasn't quite Sonic's like Breath of the Wild moment the way some people wanted. But like, even if it didn't get like maybe as high reviews as people might have expected, like people seemed to like it and they stuck with it.
Yeah.
Gran Turismo 7, which is a very acclaimed game and one that I have also spent some time with. I don't play a lot of realistic racing games, but a few months ago, I thought I'd give it a try. And And I thought it was quite fun as well. Different from the kinds of, you know, more arcadey or like kart racing games that maybe I would normally play if I were playing a racing game. But it was kind of cool to play one that was more realistic, more about finding that perfect line through the course. But Gran Turismo 7 can be a very difficult game at times, but it's difficult in maybe a different way than an adventure style game would be difficult.
Yeah. I feel like it might be more like niche too, like genre wise, where it's like, you know, the more popular racing games are these more like cartoony racers. So even within racing, this is like, you know, although I guess Gran Turismo is pretty big. So I guess it's not that niche, but I guess I don't know a lot of people in my life that are playing it too much. I played like their, like maybe the old one on PlayStation 1 or 2. That was the last time.
Yeah, I'd never played one before. And I reached a point where I kind of like had sort of felt like moving on to other things. But I wouldn't say that I like completely gave up on it or anything. Gran Turismo 7 has a retirement rate of 6.4. So 6.4% of people. And I think it's interesting that it's like, it's hard, but it's hard in a different way from how Sekiro is. And I think people are maybe more acclimated to like difficulty in adventure style games. But when you're playing Gran Turismo, it's hard in how you're sort of learning a new skill. You're learning a new way to play a video game in some ways. And there are certain challenges that do require you to just be really technical with how you go into a turn and how you just have a perfect run through a given course. Some of the license challenges that will just take you through like a section of the course, but you have to do it in like a very specific time. It can be very, very technical, but maybe people are kind of more comfortable with an adventure style game where you're dying a lot, but you're still doing a lot of the things that you do in other video games. Like you're still swinging swords at stuff or casting spells, doing these things that people kind of are familiar with, and they're familiar with what difficulty looks like in that context. Whereas playing Gran Turismo 7 is a little bit of its own unique experience. And if that's just not for you, then that might lead to more people bouncing off of it. But a very good game. I've had a lot of fun with it. And I do appreciate that you can play it in the very technical way if you want to. You can also do what I did, was spend a little extra money to get one of the weird futuristic cars that go like extremely fast, and then just go to a course that has a lot of straightaways and just go as fast as you can and plow into the cars going the opposite direction. So after playing for quite a while, doing all the technical stuff, not all the technical stuff, but like playing it the regular way and unlocking cars and unlocking tournaments and stuff, I kind of felt like playing it in a more arcadey way. And that was also kind of fun to do as well. So
that's how I play those games too. Hitting walls and stuff.
It's kind of fun to get a car that goes so fast you can barely control it after, you know, driving your hot hatches, trying to be really perfect about it. Reading some of the comments online, someone said taking a break. Someone said gets very repetitive, not very gamey. Clunky UI. I don't know. I didn't find the UI that clunky, but there are a lot of menus in this game. But yeah, it's just kind of, you know, if it's particular way of being a game is either sort of for you or not. It's just, you know, not necessarily something for everyone.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take two games that really don't have anything in common with each other. Donkey Kong 64.
Whoa.
And Donkey Kong 64 is going up against Just Dance 2019.
Okay. Well, I was expecting these two games. I want to say that Just Dance has less people dropping it. Probably. Maybe. Well, I don't know. Donkey Kong fans are pretty passionate, but I feel like people who buy Just Dance must be so into it because they keep coming out with Just Dances. Even for older consoles, it cannot be stopped. So I think the fervor for dancing is strong. So I'm going to go with Just Dance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Donkey Kong 64, of course, notorious for just how many collectibles are in this game. I really like Donkey Kong 64, actually, but I realize that it does have a lot of stuff to find. And then Just Dance 2019 is, you know, yet another entry in the Just Dance series. I just kind of picked a random year. this one includes Finesse Remix by Bruno Mars featuring Cardi B, Bang 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 by Big Bang, the K-pop band, and Shaky Shaky by Daddy Yankee, and more.
Classic.
I have actually seen Big Bang in concert in South Korea.
Whoa.
I was visiting a friend there like a few years ago. And we went to a concert they did at the World Cup Stadium. And I wasn't really that familiar with them, but I had heard of them before. And my friend was into them, and I thought it would be cool to see them. And there was a surprise guest appearance by Psy during that concert.
So
I saw them also do, I saw him do Gangnam Style. And it was kind of interesting to see Gangnam Style being performed.
That is
in
so
South
awesome.
Korea. if I'm going to go to this like a random K-pop concert, it was like a really good random K-pop concert to be at.
Yeah, he gets quite a bit of play at my job, so it's very funny.
Yeah, it's a very fun concert. And we saw a little like pop-up one on the street with a different group later on. But you are going with, you thought more people would bounce off of Donkey Kong?
Yes.
Is that what you were saying? I don't want to lead you one way or the other.
No, I had chosen Just Dance even prior.
Okay. And the song titles didn't affect your choice at all either. You weren't like, people are definitely bouncing off of it due to Bruno Mars featuring Cardi B.
No, I think it's if anything, it's more of a draw. People, they have to dance. They need the tunes.
Yeah, they must dance, right? Yeah, and that was, to be clear, no disrespect to Bruno Mars or Cardi B if they are listening. I'm just making a joke about whether or not the song titles affect the retirement rate or not. So Just Dance 2019 does have the higher retirement rate by a lot.
Oh.
Just Dance 2019 has a very high retirement rate of 18.4%.
Good Lord.
And Donkey Kong has a moderate retirement rate of 6.7%. So Donkey Kong 64 has a retirement rate kind of in the same range of Gran Turismo 7, actually.
Whoa.
I think that your logic actually was correct, but in sort of the opposite way that you were thinking. So because there are so many of them and they keep coming out with new ones, that seems to be a big reason why people drop off. Like they'll play 2019 and then 2020 comes out. And then they're like, okay, we're done with 2020 or done with 2019. Now it's time for 2020. So I think that's a big factor. So let's see what people said. This person said, retired for next year's version. Someone else said, why would I ever play this again?
Okay.
And then this person said, boring old piece of crap every time. I also like this person that said, not for completion. They're like, they're a casual dancer. They don't dance for completion.
I'm a hardcore dancer. Yeah. I actually never played Donkey Kong 64, even though I had it in 64. I loved like Banjo-Kazooie and stuff, but it felt like no one I knew was really talking about it, and maybe for reasons.
I really liked it. I think that you definitely have to be in the 3D adventure game with lots of collectibles mindset. But if you liked like Banjo-Kazooie and Banjo-Tooie, it's not quite as good as those games, but it's still very fun. It's Rare doing what Rare knows how to do. And for our next one, we have Superman for the Nintendo 64, a game that is sometimes known as Superman 64, but it really is just called Superman. From 1999, famously one of the worst games for the Nintendo 64, and maybe one of the worst games ever.
This one I did actually play. Don't ask me why I skipped Donkey Kong 64, but picked up this masterpiece. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's terrible.
I remember renting this as a kid, with my brother, and there's those like awkward levels where you have to fly through rings. I've since watched like playthroughs of this game online, and I kind of think that there are parts of it that look like they would be kind of fun just to kind of play around in, even if they're not very well designed. Like sometimes the jankiness of a game can actually be kind of fun. I don't know, maybe it's more fun to watch than it is to play. This is one that I've been kind of thinking that would be fun to pick up again at some point.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, maybe just for the novelty of it.
I have to hear about that if you're gonna go back and play it.
I don't know, maybe just for the experience. I was just at the Midwest Gaming Classic in Milwaukee yesterday, and I did see this game like complete in box, and it's like a little too expensive complete in box to want to get. Like, I was like, oh, I would actually maybe pick that up if we're like a very inexpensive loose cartridge, but it's like, this is not a game I feel the need to have complete in box.
Mm-mm.
And so we've got Superman versus Overwatch 2.
Oh, Overwatch 2 is the new one that people are like real angry about, right? Is that the contentious one?
They might be.
Oh, you're not gonna tell me, huh?
I think it's fair to say that a lot of people did not enjoy Overwatch 2 as much as they liked the original Overwatch.
Huh.
Although some people do like Overwatch 2.
Okay. Well, I feel like it still probably is working off a foundation from the first game that did do well enough that probably, and people seem into the characters, that there's probably still enough of a base of people willing to still play that. I don't know about Superman 64. I'm going to say Superman 64.
You would be right. but it is actually very close.
Whoa.
So Superman has a 24% retirement rate. It's in the extreme category. That's dark red. Extreme retirement on this game. Overwatch 2 also has extreme retirement at 23.2%.
Wow, so that's higher than, yeah.
Superman is actually less than 1% higher, but it does win out.
Wow.
And actually, like, Overwatch 2 did get pretty kind of review bombed online when it came out. Let's see what some people are saying. This person says, big step down from the first game. Lots of server errors. This person says, IDK, it was fun for a while, but got a bit boring. This person said, retired until next season. So it was just very polarizing. I think it was just, it made some changes to a game people really liked. And when that happens, sometimes people don't want to come back and play the new version.
Yeah.
And then Superman has an extreme retirement rate because it's just not a very good video game.
It's terrible, comically so. Mm-hmm. But even with it being so funny bad, it's not one of those funny bad games that you play to, I mean, you could to just to laugh at, but even that's a pretty brutal with this one.
Yeah, people say, speaks for itself, and worst game ever. Sorry, Superman. Yeah.
Sorry, Superman.
All right, and then we've got one more that we'll do. We've got Stardew Valley versus SSX Tricky.
Oh, wow. I played Stardew Valley. I enjoyed that game. That's a popular game. I feel like people... I played through that game on PC and on Switch and enjoyed it. Although, I don't know if I... How do you 100% that game, though? I feel like you retire once you, like, build your farm, get married, and have your first kid, and then you're like, well, I lived my life.
It's like saying, how do you do a completionist run of life?
Yeah, exactly. So that's, I wonder how that is quantified. I don't know. Is this, like, a trick? Well...
Is it tricky? Tricky?
Is it? I'm gonna say the snowboarding game, the Tricky SS. Sorry, I don't know
SSX
the title.
Tricky? Have you played SSX Tricky?
Was there one on the N64?
No.
Maybe
I played it on the GameCube and.
Oh, GameCube. No, I never played it.
It was on some other consoles too.
What snowboarding game did I play? There was one on the N64. That's the one I played.
I mean, there's 1080 snowboarding.
That one.
Okay.
That's the one I played.
Yeah, SSX Tricky is sort of even, it's even more arcadey and over the top and really fun, wacky characters.
Huh.
A lot of gravity defying cool moves that you can do. It's a really fun game.
That sounds cool. But I feel like one is a game that might be more difficult and not, I don't know. Oh,
there's a lot to unlock with each character. And SSX Tricky.
So to 100 to complete that one, you got to unlock so much stuff too.
Well, you'd have to like go through the different modes with each character, or at least there's like a particular mode, if I remember right, where like, you know, you work your way through the sort of the campaign, kind of unlocking boards and unlocking levels.
Okay, I'm gonna do Stardew Valley. It's a popular game, but maybe people like me just stopped at a certain point. Mm-hmm.
And that is correct. That's how this one works. Is where a game like Stardew Valley, it has a moderate retirement rate of 9.6, and it just seems to be because people just kind of play it until they're done, and maybe just due to the way the kind of system of reporting works, there's not quite a way to represent, like, I don't know. It almost seems like maybe there should be a category for like you completed it sort of in your mind.
Yeah. I for me, I was complete. I was like, I lived the life I could not in real life.
Like this bought person a home says,
or got a home.
This person says, I got married and farmed about as much as I care to.
The same.
Like I guess you could count that as a retirement, or you could count that as like you just got everything you wanted to get out of the game in a way.
Yeah.
SSX Tricky has a 5.9% also moderate retirement rate, but 5.9 is pretty low, really. It's kind of in the range that a lot of games are.
Not bad then.
This person, someone says, never finished. Which, you know, as much as I think SSX Tricky is a really fun game, like I never got everything for every character. Not that it's like a particularly long game. They have an average completionist run as being 43 hours and 10 minutes. I don't really know where these numbers come from, because like I don't know how many people were playing on the GameCube back in the day, like keeping track of exactly how long it took.
Yeah, whoa.
But, These numbers are these self-reported numbers are probably, you know, very much just random guessing.
Yeah. Well, wow.
So I think that has interesting things. Doing that exercise was like, it was good for me too to realize like what like kind of turns people onto a game versus turns people off from a game, and how it doesn't really seem like difficulty is a major factor. It's more how the game is structured. And it seems like games that aren't adventure or action style games maybe have more of a drop off rate just because they involve more specific skills for that genre.
Yeah. I think it's also probably like entries, you know, like with Overwatch, you know, it was folks who did like that genre, but it was a new entry that didn't meet their expectations. And so they just dropped off.
But on that note, we're gonna wrap things up for this episode. We still have an act three that'll be available for the patrons on Patreon, so if you'd like to hear that, you can support us there. But if you're on our regular feed, thanks for listening. Thanks for being here, Bridget.
Yeah, it's always my pleasure.
And we will see you again in another 2 weeks.
Bye.
Kirby Conversations is a production from me, Sean Douglas, Kai, Captain Dangerous Parker, and Bridget. If you enjoyed this show, please subscribe in your podcast player for a new episode every 2 weeks. For Kai's photography, Bridget's video game content, and regular updates about this show, you can also follow us on social media through the links in the episode description. We especially hope you'll join us on Blue Sky, Threads, and Instagram. Our theme music is the song Winds of Change by Megan Kello in a new arrangement from Duncan Pixel T. Smith. And our show art is by DJ at drawing_lemons_z on Instagram. Kirby Conversations also has a Patreon, where patrons can receive bonus content, deleted scenes, and other rewards, including games and merchandise. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back again soon with more Kirby Conversations.
Any quotes from the DK one?
Oh, yeah, let's talk about Donkey Kong 2. So someone said through crystal caves, so maybe they made it that far. Some of these I'm not reading because they're a little vulgar.
Oh, okay, yeah, no, this is a family podcast.
This is a family podcast.